It's time for justice. Welcome to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. on 97.3 FM WRIR and online at www.wrir.org. I'm your host, Marty Wegebright. This show is written and produced by Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. We give free, civil, non-criminal legal aid to low-income people in Richmond, Petersburg, Charlottesville, and surrounding cities and counties. Coming up on this week's show...
Recently, the Dodd-Frank law, which is most anybody can hear that there's something going on about Dodd-Frank because you see so much debate about it on television. The Dodd-Frank law is a consumer protection law that was... very fiercely debated and very controversial, but it is the law of the land, and it has new rules that went into effect in January of this year. If a lender has given a borrower an opportunity to seek a loan modification, and the borrower has completed the application more than 37 days before a foreclosure date, then the lender cannot foreclose until the lender has gone through the entire process of considering this application for a loan modification, including the appeal process of you can appeal within 30 days of a turndown. And so this is a new grounds that the lender has to be careful to comply with, otherwise the borrower has grounds to stop that foreclosure.
Private attorney Henry McLaughlin discusses mortgage foreclosures, the various rules lenders must follow in order to foreclose, and how borrowers can stop foreclosures. And during this week's News You Can Use, you'll learn about two recently passed unemployment compensation bills that will help low and moderate income people. All that and more coming up. Stay with us. The show is supported in part by a grant from the Virginia Law Foundation. This show, number 240, is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society and gives only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford an attorney, we'll tell you later in the show how to get free legal advice or representation in a civil case. The Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show is heard every Wednesday at 12:30 on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio, and online at www.wrir.org, and is made possible by community radio volunteers at WRIR. And now, this week's News You Can Use. Two recently passed unemployment compensation bills have been signed into law by the governor and should help low and moderate income people. Senate Bill 18 provides that good cause for leaving employment exists if an employee voluntarily leaves a job to accompany the employee's spouse, who is on active duty in the military or naval services of the United States, to a new military-related assignment established pursuant to a permanent change of duty order from which the employee's place of employment is not reasonably accessible. The measure applies only if the state to which the spouse is transferred has a similar provision, unless the transfer involves members of the Virginia National Guard relocated within the Commonwealth. Benefits paid to qualifying claimants shall be charged against the pool rather than against the claimant's employer. The measure will expire on December 31, 2020. The Virginia Employment Commission is required to report to the Commission on Unemployment Compensation regarding the effects of allowing such claimants to be eligible for unemployment benefits. Senate Bill 110 could positively impact clients by reducing job loss. It allows employers who have reduced business volume to opt in to creating shared work programs, whereby they reduce hours of a number of employees as a means for dealing with reduced business volume, rather than engaging in layoffs. This benefits employers who choose to participate by retaining good workers and fostering increased morale. It allows employees who might otherwise be subject to layoffs to keep their jobs and draw partial unemployment compensation payments, even in scenarios where standard partial unemployment compensation claims may not be available or would result in no actual benefit payments. That is, where earnings would be too high to actually receive a weekly benefit payment. This was a huge win for Social Action Linking Together, or SALT, a parish-based network of persons in the Catholic Diocese of Arlington, and the bipartisan coalition that pushed it after several years of advocacy. It was finally signed into law in final form after many revisions back and forth between the House of Delegates, the State Senate, and the Governor. However, its success depends on having employers opt in to creating shared work programs rather than doing layoffs. With this week's news you can use, this is your host, Marty Wegebright. Mortgage lenders often fail to send a proper 30-day cure notice, fail to follow FHA requirements for foreclosure, and fail to follow CFPB regulations prohibiting dual tracking. Private attorney Henry McLaughlin discusses mortgage foreclosures, the various rules lenders must follow in order to foreclose, and how borrowers can stop foreclosures in the first part of a two-part interview. We're here at Central Virginia Legal Aid Society, and we are speaking with Henry McLaughlin, formerly the executive director of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society, now in private practice in downtown Richmond, area of concentration, foreclosure, prevention, and rescue, which is what we will be talking about today. Welcome back, Henry.
Thank you.
So would you tell our listeners, so they will have some background, how is the foreclosure process in Virginia supposed to work?
Well, Virginia technically is both a judicial and non-judicial foreclosure state, so it is possible for a lender to foreclose through a court proceeding, but that very rarely happens. The overwhelming majority of foreclosures in Virginia are non-judicial foreclosures. What happens is, in a deed of trust, a mortgage in Virginia is called a deed of trust. The homeowner signs a deed of trust and transfers what's called legal title to the home to a trustee. The lender can replace the trustee with a substitute trustee, and oftentimes the lenders do that. And then the lender will instruct the substitute trustee to sell the home at foreclosure because it's in arrears. The substitute trustee then advertises in the newspaper for a foreclosure sale. The amount of number of times it has to be in the papers is either specified in the deed of trust, or if it's not, it has to be four weeks. It has to be in a newspaper with general circulation in the county or city where the home is, and then the substitute trustee conducts an auction at the sale, which is usually in front of the courthouse. Sometimes people think that there has to be something filed in court, and they go to the clerk's office to find out if the clerk's office knows anything, and invariably the clerk will say no. A non-judicial foreclosure means that the clerk and the court are not informed. It's just that they choose most times to conduct the auction in front of the courthouse. And then usually the lender puts in a bid, sometimes for the amount owed. If there's equity in the house, sometimes investors will come and bid, and whoever makes the high bid is then sold the house and then owns it. And then they have a trustee's deed to the home by the substitute trustee to the buyer.
Is there any requirement in this process that the borrower, the homeowner, receives some sort of notification as to what's going on?
Yes. Virginia's statute provides that either the lender or the substitute trustee must give notice to the owner of the home at the last known address of the owner of the home in the records of the lender. It must be sent by certified mail, and it must be sent 14 days before the sale. This can mean that the homeowner doesn't actually get that notice until 13, 12, 11, or 10 days before the sale. The first notice that people get that their home is going to be foreclosed, if they don't know it by calling the lender, is they'll get letters from lawyers soliciting their services. And that's the early warning signal, and oftentimes that'll be a month before the sale or 3 weeks or more before the sale. And it's very rare because of that that homeowners get foreclosed on and don't actually know about it.
So this sounds like a fairly straightforward process. A homeowner, a borrower, is behind on the mortgage. The lender advertises, the lender sends notices, and the sale happens. So what are the problems that you see? What are the flaws? And how do these things get prevented or stopped?
Well, let's start with reverse mortgages. Recently, there have been some foreclosures of reverse mortgages. A reverse mortgage is where someone is in advanced age. They have to be at least 62. It's usually in the late 70s or 80s. Makes a loan, and the terms of the loan are they get money back, or else if they don't get money back, they don't have to make any payments, and they get to live in the home the rest of their lives. But they are supposed to pay the taxes and insurance, and sometimes the lenders, recently I've seen some cases where lenders move to foreclose on these homes saying that the taxes and insurance weren't paid. And in those cases, the lender has to have sent a 30-day notice to the borrower and has to get permission from HUD to do it. And so sometimes they have not done either or both of those things, and that's a grounds to stop a foreclosure.
And in those reverse mortgage situations where the homeowner essentially is getting a loan from the reverse mortgage company, isn't it possible for the homeowner to get an additional loan off the equity in the house to pay those taxes and that insurance if that becomes necessary?
I mean, usually not, because the first mortgage is the first lien. I've never seen a reverse mortgage with a second mortgage, except that they often have two mortgages as part of the reverse mortgage. But I don't think that's an option. But people, it's not, oftentimes the taxes are not required because of provisions in the tax law that let someone of advanced age not pay taxes. And the insurance is not high, and usually there is enough income of some kind, Social Security, to pay that.
So what about the conventional mortgage situation that you described earlier, where the lender has to advertise a sufficient number of times, has to send some type of notice to the homeowner? What do you do in that situation to stop or prevent a foreclosure? Again, what are the flaws or problems that you see?
Well, the most common grounds to stop a foreclosure is most deeds of trust have a provision requiring a 30-day cure notice. The way you can be sure that's true is if you look on your deed of trust down at the bottom of the first page, if it says Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, then on paragraph 22, there's going to be a provision that they have to send a 30-day cure notice. And the lenders usually do send those notices, but there are many cases in which those notices are wrong. They misstate the amount that's owed. Or the deed of trust requires that the notice say you can reinstate after the 30 days if we accelerate, and you can file a lawsuit to assert any defense against acceleration of the note or foreclosure. There's a very recent case. It was last month in the federal court in the Eastern District held that the form notice that at least was sent out by Wells Fargo was incorrect, because it didn't say you could file a court action. It said you could argue in the foreclosure proceeding, which means you could you could try to convince the substitute trustee to stop the foreclosure, whereas the deed of trust says you're supposed to tell the homeowner that they can file a lawsuit. Now, that's a split on that case. There's a case in Richmond Federal District Court which held to the contrary. But the most common grounds to stop a foreclosure that I see is that there's something wrong with the 30-day cure notice. Recently, the Dodd-Frank law, which is most anybody can hear that there's something going on about Dodd-Frank because you see so much debate about it on television. The Dodd-Frank law is a consumer protection law that was very fiercely debated and very controversial, but it is the law of the land, and it has new rules that went into effect in January of this year. If a lender has given a borrower an opportunity to seek a loan modification, and the borrower has completed the application more than 37 days before foreclosure date, then the lender cannot foreclose until the lender has gone through the entire process of considering this loan, this application for a loan modification, including the appeal process. Of the, you can appeal within 30 days of a turndown. And so this is a new grounds that the lender has to be careful to comply with, otherwise the borrower has grounds to stop that foreclosure.
And how does a borrower know that they have, in fact, submitted a completed application for a loan modification from their lender? Because those are very tricky and complicated sometimes.
Well, you're right. There is has been a endemic problem in which lenders have said to borrowers, we're going to consider you for a loan modification, and the borrower sends in the everything that the lender says they want, and then the lender says, we didn't get it all. And I see this quite frequently, that the lender claims that the borrower didn't get it, and the borrower's got the facts proof that they, in fact, had sent it in, and then they resend it, and then the lender says, well, now it's out of date, because it has to be up within a period of time. And so it's a question of fact. And if you're facing a foreclosure, talk to a lawyer, come to legal aid, and have that looked at. But if and this doesn't apply to every kind of mortgage. It may not apply if it's a, depending on the circumstances, it may not apply if it's if you're renting the property. But if it's your home, then the Dodd-Frank law does apply. And if you, someone had, the Dodd-Frank law, the new rules are intended to deal with a real serious problem in the country, which is commonly called dual process foreclosing or dual foreclosing, in which the lender is saying, with the one hand, we'll consider you for a loan modification. On the other hand, they're saying, we're foreclosing on you. And then they foreclose while the loan modification is being considered. And until the new Dodd-Frank law came into effect, there wasn't any law to prevent that. What did occur in some cases is borrowers have said, the lenders, I called and said, you're sending me these advertisements saying that you're going to foreclose on my home, but then you're also telling me I can apply for a loan modification. What's going on here? And some borrowers have said that lenders said, you don't have to worry about that, you're going to be okay, and then they foreclosed anyway. And there have been a number of fraud claims that have been brought in courts, and most of the courts have allowed those cases to go to trial. And so there are cases in which borrowers sue to get the house back after foreclosure. But if the borrower has been told by the lender, we're not going to foreclose, and then finds out that the foreclosure is going forward, that's another grounds to stop the foreclosure based on promissory estoppel.
Now, you mentioned fraud a few minutes ago, and that's a good segue to another thing I wanted to talk about, which is the substitute trustee that you mentioned earlier in our talk, that it's the substitute trustee who has the actual power to do the foreclosure sale at auction. What problems do you see with appointing substitute trustees?
Well, this is a problem that is almost entirely been cured in present practice. But back not too many years ago, there was, back in, I think it was 2010, there were news articles, front page articles, exposing the fact of a practices in some cases, which are commonly called robo-signing. There was an article on the front page of the Washington Post about a particular man named Jeffrey Stephen who acknowledged that he was signing the documents to appoint the substitute trustee in the realm of $10,000 a month, that he would sign them without reading them, and that they'd be taken somewhere else for a notary public to say that he had signed it before that notary public. The problem was so bad that Bank of America, for example, in October 2010, announced that they were stopping all foreclosures while they looked at their signing practices and looked at this issue of robo-signing, and then most of the lenders followed suit, and there was a moratorium imposed by the lending industry on their foreclosures because there were so many problems in these signings. But the sorts of things that would happen is the appointment of substitute trustee is a document in Virginia has to at some point be recorded in the clerk's office, not before the foreclosure, but after foreclosure. And on examination of these appointments, oftentimes there's a staple mark on the second page, but not on the first page, which indicates that the second page was attached to something when it was signed. It was just a signature page. All it says is, witness the following signatures and seals. So the person signing wasn't signing anything that appointed any of the substitute trustee. They just signed a signature page, and the first page was put on later. And the courts have split about this. There's a real split in the authorities as to whether the borrower has any recourse over this. About half of the courts have held that it doesn't make any difference and the borrower has no standing to contest this. And about half the courts have said, well, this is now a stranger who is doing the foreclosing, and so this foreclosure is void. This process back in those days was grounds to stop a foreclosure prior to the foreclosure, because under Virginia law, the appointment of substitute trustee has to be sent to the borrower. Either the lender must send to the borrower a statement of where that is recorded in the clerk's office, or else have to send a copy of the document itself. And almost always they would send a copy of the document because they didn't record it until after the foreclosure. And back in those days, if one looked at the appointment of substitute trustee, sometimes it could be determined through the internet and research on the internet that the person signing this is a known robo-signer. There are all sorts of different signatures on the internet of this same person's signature, which means different people were signing that person's name, or else there was a staple mark on the second page and not the first page. But I don't see that anymore. I think in foreclosures going on now, that is not so much an issue.
Now, several years ago, there was a huge problem with foreclosure rescue scams, scammers contacting homeowners, borrowers in arrears and making all sorts of false promises to help them. Is that something you are still seeing?
Yes, that is a terrible problem. And this is one of the things that the lenders do well with. The lenders will send out to people when they send them something, information about you are behind, you may be considered for a loan modification. They almost always include language saying, beware of rescue scams. But I've seen many people in my office who've paid anywhere from $400 to $4,000 to someone. And it's real simple. If there's somebody out of state who is telling you that they're going to get you a loan modification, hang up the phone. Because I've never known a case in which somebody out of state who says they're going to help you get a loan modification is going to do a good job. I don't charge people money to try to get a loan modification, and the reason I don't do that is because I think the free services are better than I am. And the free services are NACA. The HUD-sponsored counseling agencies are also free and also very good. They don't have as high a success rate because they're not able to match the lender and the borrower in the same room. They have to do it through faxes and emails and things of that nature, and things get lost on the lender side, or they somehow the lender says, well, this information is out of date, or we didn't get it, the problem I was talking to you about earlier. So if you are trying to get a loan modification, there's nothing wrong with trying to deal directly with the lender, although it can be a maddening experience. The best thing to do is go to NACA or one of the HUD-sponsored counseling agencies. You can go on the internet and find out who they are, and they're all free, and if the free people are the best.
You've been listening to private attorney Henry McLaughlin discussing mortgage foreclosures, the various rules lenders must follow in order to foreclose, and how borrowers can stop foreclosures in the first part of a two-part interview. The second part will continue next Wednesday at 12:30 p.m. This is the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. That's all for this week's Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. This show is heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. The show is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. To see if you can get free civil legal aid, call during intake hours. These are Monday through Thursday, 9 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. and 1 p.m. to 2:30 p.m. The phone number is 200-6046 for intake, 648-1012 for the main number, and 1-800-868-1012 to call toll-free. If you have any comments on the show, you can email them to marty@cvlas.org. In addition, every first-run Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio show ever broadcast is available at www.radioforall.net. That's radio, the numeral 4, all.net. Then click the contributor link, and then click Marty Wegbright, Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. This show provides only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford one, call Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. Mortgage lenders often fail to send a proper 30-day cure notice, fail to follow FHA requirements for foreclosure, and fail to follow CFPB regulations prohibiting dual tracking. Join us next Wednesday at 12:30 p.m. when private attorney Henry McLaughlin discusses mortgage foreclosures and how to prevent them in the second part of a two-part interview. That's law for the rest of us next week on the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. I'm Marty Wegbright.